You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, your host here, Colt Molesky, bringing you daily Wolves content. You can check out the written form of that content on the Locked On Timberwolves fan rake site if you so desire. Also, past episodes are also located on that website. Today, we're going to take a quick pause. There's been a lot of Timberwolves action. They played the Spurs and the Rockets over the weekend. We're going to get to that, but that's tomorrow, because I don't know if you guys know this, but there's also been a little tournament, the NCAA men's basketball tournament, going on over the weekend. And I think it's important to touch on that, to recognize that and some of the happenings going on there. And I think it's also important to keep tabs on that for NBA fans, just because there's a lot of prospects, a lot of the ups and downs before the draft, just as far as maybe where players go, the excitement around certain players or the devaluing of certain players. A lot of that happens in the tournament. And so today I brought on a special guest, Matthew Laurie, to talk about the prospects in that class that we're headed into the draft season here, kind of looking at those prospects. He is a fellow writer with me on the SB Nation website, Conquest Chronicles. He does a lot of the men's basketball for the USC basketball team, Falls College basketball. Matt, thanks for coming on the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me. I was looking forward to it all weekend. A lot of things happening in the NCAA tournament, so I'm happy to be on here.
And we're happy to have you. Tons to talk about. We were talking a little bit before the show, before we got underway, just how wide open this is this year. Obviously, with the first time ever that a 16 seed has beaten a number one seed, and that was obviously UMBC over Virginia. But so many other upsets, too. Arizona got blown out by the Buffalo Bulls, and that was a 13 seed over a 4 seed. The other day, UNC lost by a pretty good margin to Texas A&M. We've had upsets all over the place. Loyola keeps blazing through the tournament. After beating Miami, they beat Tennessee, both by very tight margins of victory. It's been an intense tournament. Xavier's been bumped off. Cincinnati's been bumped off. A lot of teams looking like this may be one of the most defining years, just as far as the talent is evenly placed and dispersed throughout the college basketball scene. What do you take away when you're looking at just the array of talent over all these rosters, as far as what we're seeing in basketball, maybe the shift in college hoops?
Well, I think what you're seeing now is a lot of the mid-majors, or a lot of the lower-seeded teams, are now over. They're getting over the fact of they see these big names or these high-ranked or high-seeded teams, and they're over the fact of the wow factor, and they're going out there and they're playing basketball. You know, as you said, with the 16-seeded UMBC beating Virginia, who is the number one overall seed for the first time ever, it's just you're seeing senior heavy teams, you know, take charge and doing the extra things to beat these teams, you know. And I think it's also you're seeing the higher ranked, the higher seeded teams probably underestimating these teams, which tends to happen. But also another thing to keep in mind, that these guys, sometimes they don't have tape on these teams, you know. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of tape to look at a lot of the teams that you're going up against. So you can't really study them unless you're playing like an Arizona, or unless you're playing like unless it's like an 8-9 matchup. But for a lot of these mid-major teams, there's not that much tape for these teams to study them, or they just go in there thinking that they're going to handle it right then and there. And next thing you know it, they have their guard down, and then, boom, upsets are happening.
No, yeah. And I would say that the way you're describing that, it almost tailors more to the upset you saw Buffalo versus Arizona rather than Virginia versus UMBC, because Virginia lost their Hunter, their sixth man of the year. They were always susceptible to the three-point shooting. You knew that going in, and UMBC just got hot at the right time from downtown, and they were able to take advantage of that. Arizona legitimately didn't look like they were ready to play against Buffalo at all.
They didn't at all. It was just, you thought going into the game that Arizona would take advantage of their size. You have Ayton down low. You have another their other big man down low. You have Alonzo Trier, who has some good size on him. You have Royal Alkins, who also has some size on him. So you got size. Arizona has size, but you said it. I mean, you said it best. They just looked like they weren't ready to play.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention, Arizona also struggled down the line. Remember, they struggled with Colorado in the quarterfinals of the Pac-12 tournament, and they somewhat struggled with UCLA as well. Now, mind you, UCLA is not a bad team as people make it out to be, but remember, they struggled in three straight games before they ultimately pulled away in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
With Buffalo, they just had that advantage where they went small, and they were able to take their bigs. They were able to force Arizona's bigs to guard on the perimeter, and they took away the low post. Or if anything, they did what a lot of teams don't do. They boxed out the Arizona bigs to get those rebounds. They did a good job at boxing out, which is something you don't really see a lot of teams in college basketball do. That was the big issue with a lot of teams when they were getting out-rebounded by Arizona. They would just try to jump with Arizona's bigs, and that wasn't happening. Arizona's bigs were too physical. But you saw Buffalo, they went to the proper technique of boxing out, and they forced their Arizona's bigs to guard on the perimeter, and that was a recipe for disaster.
No, yeah, and it was equally impressive just because Buffalo had the starting four guards starting, and so to be able to give, like you're saying, the boxing out and to be able to give trouble to the bigs of Arizona like that, plus playing with such a different lineup than Arizona plays with, it was a great game to watch. It was a truly impressive performance by Buffalo in the 21-point win. Some of the takeaways we're going to have from this weekend, we're going to go over some athletes, some prospects that we are still watching the tournament for the draft, some guys that maybe have popped up on the radar that weren't initially on the radar before the tournament. But first, I wanted to get to a couple guys that maybe lost some stock, guys like Trae Young, guys like DeAndre Ayton. Are these guys, in your mind, these kind of stars, or stars like them, maybe somebody I didn't mention who left in the first round or two, guys like maybe like a Joel Berry or something like that, where they lost badly in the second round, does that hurt their NBA draft stock, do you think? Or do you think a guy like Trae Young is going to kind of shake this off?
I think a guy like Trae Young, he's going to shake this off. Mm-hmm. Because I do think he did slip down a few picks, because remember, before that game against Alabama and before Oklahoma hit their slide, he was being mentioned as potentially being a top pick, probably a top three pick. Now that you're looking at it, you're possibly looking at him sliding down to maybe six, maybe seven, because of that slide, because he went through a slump, and that's something you see freshmen go through, is they kind of hit that freshman wall. But I think with him, he's still a lottery pick. Now, someone like Ayton, you're still going to see him go number one regardless.
Yeah.
You're still going to see someone like him go number one regardless because of what he can do, because of what he showcased before the first round, you know. Somebody like Joel Berry, now, if you're someone like Joel Berry who you're looking at a second round, then yeah, you might want to be a little worried about how you performed in the tournament, because that could mean possibly a mid-second round pick, could be a late second round pick, or he could go undrafted. Now, I don't see Joel Berry getting going undrafted at all, but that's something where he's going to, it hurts his stock, and now he kind of has to make up for that in the workout.
No, yeah. So it kind of it's the guys at the end of that first round, early second round, who maybe you see moving more picks than the guys at the top of the draft, really.
Yeah, and honestly, you could see more guys who performed well and who were bumped out of the second round. You could see more of those guys end up potentially moving up into the first round. Guys who weren't on NBA radars now. All of a sudden, you're hearing them being mentioned more. Someone like a Rob Gray, who I thought performed very well, despite Houston losing, though I think he could work his way into the first round, or he worked his way on a lot of NBA teams' radars.
Oh yeah, definitely, and that's kind of that tournament bump where it definitely helps when you're facing a situation where it's one and done as far as winning or going home, and you're facing maybe elevated competition or you're just facing matchups that look favorable in some of these games where a player can really look impressive. We're going to go to a quick break for some sponsors before we move on to some guys who have moved up on the draft radar. So the tournament there's always a couple guys in the tournament that after some impressive performances, they suddenly explode onto everybody's radar. Everybody can't stop talking about them. I had a couple guys on my list, maybe not the guys everybody's talking about. I think the first one is pretty stereotypical of what everybody's talking about, though. Rob Gray for Houston. After the 39-point performance against San Diego State, followed it up even though the team lost. He had 23 points, 10 rebounds in the game against Michigan. He's been averaging 19.3 points per game on Houston, a team that actually was an under-the-radar really good basketball team, especially in the last 2 months of the season. As far as Rob Gray's stock, the senior out of Forest City, North Carolina, how is he looking for you? I watched both of those games, and I loved him in both those games. Now, granted, I've not watched I only watched one or two Houston games throughout the season, so before the draft starts, I'll obviously have to dig into some film. But right now, I'm very high on Gray. I love the way he performed. I like the guards that can really take over a game through just dribbling and playmaking in isolation. They can make plays and score for their team. I think that's a valuable skill that translates to the NBA. What are your thoughts on this guy?
Oh man, I absolutely love this guy. I
right?
love how he played. I honestly think he's a pro. I think he's going to be on someone's NBA roster, and I think he's going to be that guy who ends up getting like some decent, some pretty good playing time. Remember, and I don't know if you remember when Kyle Kuzma last year was playing at Utah, and how.
Yeah.
During summer league, Kyle Kuzma came up. Everyone's like, "Wow, and Kyle Kuzma was a late first round pick." Everyone's like, "Wow, you know, he's playing good during summer league, but can he keep it up during preseason?" And in preseason, he was doing the same thing. I think you'll see the same from Rob Gray. Where he's not on many people's radar, but like come summer league or something like that. He's gonna start wowing people, and next thing you know it, during the season, he's gonna be one of those rookies where you're like, "Wow, he came out of nowhere."
Mm-hmm.
So I really like how Rob Gray's game is.
No, and call it recency bias if you want, but I think there is a value to somebody with an outstanding performance in the tournament. And like I was saying before, I think that elevated competition, elevated pressure, while you shouldn't base your entire stock on just one game, I think that does prove some things about a player that maybe he was showing throughout the season, but now it really cements that idea. And I have to dig into some tape on Rob Gray before I make an ultimate draft decision as far as in mock drafts and such. But Right now, I really loved him, and I loved watching him play. And I just he was an icy dude. He looked the entire second half of that San Diego State game when his teammates were doing literally nothing around him. It looked like he was going to win that game just because he didn't have any qualms about it. He was going to take over the game, and he was going to knock down shots. And there's something to be said about a player that has that confidence.
No, I agree with that, too. Not only that, but he also makes some pretty good defensive plays, too.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that you know, that should be noted, because in the NBA, you look at guys who can play some defense, and he's a guy who can make defensive plays when it counts. So that's something that also caught that got my eye as well, is how good he can play defense, the little things that he does, and not only that, but getting to the basket, the moves that he can make getting to the basket as well. He's just a playmaker, and that's what I've noticed. Like I said, that's what I've noticed the first two games, you know, of watching Houston.
No, absolutely. And to your point, too, 1.1 steals throughout the season this year, and he has averaged consistently over a steal a game throughout his career at Houston. He's going to be around the ball, and he's going to make plays. A guy, and now granted, I want to add a little salt to this, but this was some questions brought up to me by Texas, by people who either are natives to Texas or go to school at Texas Tech. I know some people who go to school at Texas Tech. They were bringing up Zaire Smith to me. He had 18 points against, or 10 points against Austin. And in the next round, he had a few points. He's been interesting. I don't know. A lot of people want him to go in the, want to see him go into the lottery spot. He played well against Florida, had the 18 points. I don't know if I can give him that bump, though. What do you think about Zaire Smith?
I think he's someone where the more Texas Tech advances and the more he plays, the more eyes that are going to be on him. Because we've seen guys who in March, the further they went, and the better they play, the more their stock rose. Now, I'm going to give you an example here. Remember Kimball Walker during the UConn run?
Yes.
How many radars was he on around that time? Now, to me, at that time, I didn't hear about Kimball Walker until the Big East tournament. Until how he played in the Big East tournament. And then how the way he worked his way into the number one pick, it did wonders for him because of how he helped UConn advance. Shabazz Napier, another guy who wasn't on many people's radar until March, and then when he performed, how the way he performed and leading UConn to a national title at that time, he ended up being a lottery pick. So I think if he just keeps up his performance and Texas Tech advances, he could climb up into that lottery spot. I mean, we got to keep in mind, it does get tricky outside of the top 10. That's where I think it starts becoming wide open, and you start seeing more guys who we haven't heard of or guys in March start working their way in. This is why a lot of players, March Madness, you want to have a good performance, because that could raise your stock, given that a lot of NBA scouts watch March Madness. So he could work his way up into that late lottery selection of the draft. But right now, I think he's on the outside looking in. Not bad for him, because you could go to a playoff contender, but at the same time, he just got to keep up his performance.
But for you, he's one of those guys who kind of does need that spotlight to really help boost his stock. He's not one of those guys who, if he gets bounced in the next round, it's not going to hurt him. Like, he really needs to keep winning for him to really succeed in the draft.
Exactly. That's what I think it is. I think it's going to be one of those things where Texas Tech is going to have to keep winning. He's going to have to keep winning to get into that lottery selection, or to get into that possibly that top 10 part of the draft. I think it could happen. It's a possibility that it could happen, especially for him, because given that a lot of people's stock is going to rise or is going to fall during this time, and especially when you have guys like Trae Young, Colin Sexton, guys who could be in that top 10 or that late top 10 around the 6-7 margin, you could see their stock fall. And also Michael Porter Jr. too, whose stock could be falling because of Mizzou not playing too, he could work his way into those slots. So he just, like I said, he just got to keep on winning.
No, I like it, and I think that is probably a take right on the money. Before we head out here, who are the guys that stick out to you as kind of stars in this, guys who came in as stars for the draft, or guys who are high up on draft boards coming in, and they're one of the few guys high up on those draft boards still remaining? Who are guys who you think were kind of lottery picks beforehand and are cementing their place as lottery picks because they keep winning in the tournament?
Marvin Bagley, that's the first guy that sticks out. I'll give you a little backstory on this one, too. I've been high on Marvin Bagley III. I've been high on him since the summer. He played out at the Drew League in Los Angeles, from what a lot of people don't remember. Played at Sierra Canyon High, but played in the Drew League before he committed to Duke, and was playing against pros, and he was dominating against pros. I mean, just flat out dominating against guys like DeMar DeRozan, James Harden, you know, just pretty much just having his way. Well, I don't want to say quite having his way, but he was hanging out there, and he was like, this kid belongs. Mm-hmm. You know, this was a kid that belongs. I think he submitted his place as likely a top three pick. I think he's a top three pick, if anything. Kevin Knox is a guy who also was a lottery pick. He's working his way up. I think he's a guy that's really helping his stock with how the way Kentucky's playing and how the way he's helping Kentucky lead, or helping Kentucky go further into the tournament. I think he got a bigger spotlight on him now that they're in the Sweet 16. So that's another guy. And one more that I have in mind, Jaren Jackson from Michigan State, although they just lost, I think he's a guy that also, I think he submitted his place as a top 10 pick. And Mikal Bridges is a guy I keep an eye on too. That's a guy I think he's he's one of those guys who I think is a borderline lottery pick.
Yeah, kind of on the edge.
Yeah, I'm kind of like around maybe 13 or 14. Mm-hmm. But I think he's a guy who could work his way into the top 10.
No, yeah, I think that he saved himself a little bit in that second half against Syracuse, had a really atrocious start, just some bad misses. But Bridges is definitely an interesting character, interesting player, just because of, I think, his versatility. And by the way, I love the deep reach on the history for Bagley. Bring him back and reminiscing about games before even the season that he was playing in Los Angeles. I love that. Love backstory. I couldn't agree more on Kevin Knox. I really like his stock. I actually really like him for the Timberwolves, even though he's probably going to go far off the board before the Timberwolves have a shot at him. But I don't know. I think people might give him a knock for the 8 points against Buffalo, but they didn't need Kevin to score a ton against Buffalo. They were creaming them already. They were not the contenders, I think, that everybody thought they would be against Kentucky after they beat the brakes off of Arizona. But against Davidson in a tight 5-point game, when Davidson was really giving them trouble and Kentucky just wasn't hitting threes, 25 points, 6 rebounds, really kind of taken over that game. I think that's what you want to see when you have a star forward on your hands, is him playing really solid defense, really doing a great job, especially near the end, guarding the perimeter well. Davidson, they had a few possessions where they could have hit, and they were shooting so well early on from three. Had a few possessions late where they could have maybe tried to get back in and tie the game. And guys like Kevin Knox on that team were doing a really great job at the end of the game defending from the perimeter. And then 20, you know, 5-point game, the 25 points that Kevin Knox put up, every single one of those was crucial. And he was just, he showed that he was a star in a very tight game. And I think that in either the Sweet 16 or the Elite 8 or however far they go, when they face another opponent that's going to really give them fits, I think Kevin Knox is going to have another big game, because I think he's just kind of one of those guys where you lean on when it's kind of a tough game, and when the road gets a little rocky, that's the guy you lean on.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And like you said, he didn't really need to score a ton against Buffalo, seeing how much they were up by. A lot of people forget that Kentucky has a lot of talent. Mm-hmm. As young as they are, they have a whole bunch of talent that's capable of scoring. So he doesn't need to score a ton if he has to. He just has to do the little things to help the team, or he just has to do his part. And that's the thing with Kentucky. A lot of people think, oh, you know, he has to score all this, you know, all these points. It's not like a Trae Young situation where in Oklahoma, in order for Oklahoma to win, he's going to have to score, and he has to have the ball in his hand for Oklahoma to even have a shot at winning. Kentucky is just built differently. They're just built where they have a whole bunch of talent, and they have a whole bunch of guys who's capable of scoring, and they don't need to lean on one guy.
And I think, too, that would add to his talent. I think that if I see a guy who can play with other guys and doesn't need to be the guy every single night, like you're saying Trae Young kind of needs to be that guy, I think that just adds to his talent. I think it's good when you know that you can slot your guy next to other stars, and he's going to be okay, and he's going to find a way to contribute. And so I think that adds to his talent.
Exactly.
No, yeah, I like the March Madness talk. I've enjoyed it. Matthew, thanks for coming on. Guys, I know that the Timberwolves also had a busy weekend, and we will get to that tomorrow. Lucas Hand is coming on. He's the host of the Locked On Clippers podcast. We will talk Timberwolves tomorrow. Wednesday, we will also have a big podcast kind of talking about the Timberwolves positioning after the weekend. Later on this week, also a little tease. Might have somebody from the New York Post jumping on the podcast to talk about the Knicks basketball. So look out for that. That'll be a great show. Look out for the rest of the week. We have a star-studded group of guests. Matthew was kicking us off on Monday, and the rest of the week will follow with more great guests jumping on the Locked On Wolves podcast. Matthew, before you head out here, first of all, thanks for coming on so much. Really appreciate it. Do you have anything coming out on Conquest Chronicles that you want to plug, any article that you want to promote?
Yeah, I'm about to have an article posted up, and it's regarding what Chimezie meant to. He's been facing a lot of criticism from a lot of people in the media about sitting out the NIT for the NCAA, NCAA term, but sitting out the NIT to prepare for the NBA draft. So I have an article basically being on the side of Chimezie Metu and why it's not an issue for why I don't think it's an issue for him to sit out the NIT to prepare for the NBA draft. So I'll have an article on that coming up tonight, seeing that USC also plays Western Kentucky in the second round of the NIT.
I love it. Go on to SB Nation's Conquest Chronicles. Look out for that article tonight. Matthew, thank you so much for coming on the show. Appreciate you coming on. And I appreciate all the Locked On Wolves podcast listeners for tuning in to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast.